Since you were elected president of the Maldives, you've been waging a battle to save your country, literally. Tell me about where your battle stands at this moment.
Well, you know, for the Maldives, we are a group of tiny little islands in the Indian Ocean. We stretch 1,000 kilometers from a little south of Sri Lanka all the way up to Dioghe Gasia. And we have 2,000 islands, and even the highest point in the Maldives is just 1.5 meters over the sea. So any changes to the level of the sea has a very profound impact on us. For us, climate change is not an issue that is in the past or in the future. It is something that is happening now. We have 16 islands where we are having to relocate people because of coastal erosion. We have a serious issue with water because water has intrusion of salt water into our freshwater lens has contaminated our water tables in many islands. And we have to desalinate water on more than 70 islands. Also, we fish one by one, Poland by Poland line. We do not per se, we do not use nets. For us to fish in this manner, fish has to surface. And then when they surface to a certain level, we bait the fish and we hook them. Now, because of changes in ocean temperature, the fish is not surfacing as they used to do. So, you know, we have food security issues, water security issues, and we have to relocate people from one island to another.
So in terms of relocating people, are you saying that the sea level is already rising? I mean, there are some areas that where people used to live where they can no longer live?
There are some areas where people used to live which they're no longer able to live because the coastline has been eaten away by the ocean so much. The alternative would be very heavy adaptation, which is revetments and embankments and water breakers. We are doing that on bigger islands where we think, you know, it's financially more justifiable. But of course, it's financially justifiable on every island. But in some cases, the amount of defense work, defending the coastline, is so extensive that we are these 16 islands that we've decided would be best to leave it at that and for people to go to other islands.
I know you have talked with scientists who study climate change and have made projections about how much the sea level is likely to rise and what this means for your country. What are their projections? I mean, what's the timetable here?
Well, they're giving a window of opportunity, a very small window of opportunity for us to do something about it. And if that is not done, they are talking about a period of about 80 years to a century. During the course of which we would reach tipping points, meaning that we would reach situations where the whole thing goes wrong. The winds are going to be stronger, the monsoons are going to be shorter, the waves are going to be higher, and all sorts of different environment aberrations that we are already experiencing. And I think it's not just us. You know, what happens to the Maldives today is going to happen to you, to the United States and everyone else tomorrow. Manhattan is an island exactly like ourselves. And the level, the island is actually situated exactly almost like the Maldives. But because you have been fortunate to be able to defend it very heavily through a lot of engineering, of course, the island is much safer than any Maldive islands. But given the climate aberrations, we are not only talking about sea level rise, you must understand, it's climate change. And that involves a lot of aberrations, stronger winds, and shifting weather belts. The typhoons are shifting a little bit south, and therefore we have been affected through it. And if the, for instance, the wave belts and ocean current belts are disturbed, we're already seeing signs of how it is going to impact on Earth.
This is an incredibly daunting task you are describing here. And it's worth pointing out that you are still a young man. You're in your mid-40s, and you have been fighting for all kinds of things for much of your life. I know you had a lengthy period where you challenged the old regime of your country. Can you tell us about how you became the first democratically elected president of the Maldives?
Oh, it's a long story. basically, I've always been advocating for protection of human rights. And thankfully, American Human Rights Watch in 1994 gave me an award for that. And I've been working on human rights and freedom of expression for a very, very long time, and freedom of assembly.
And in your previous capacity, you were really an investigative journalist, weren't you?
Yes, I've always worked as an investigative journalist, and that's really been a very hazardous occupation for me. I've had to spend so many jail terms because of what I have written. But if you don't lose focus, and if you are at it, and if you don't change, everything else around you is bound to change. And we've been able to work against odds. We've been able to succeed against odds. And I think that this is similar in many situations. If you are consistent and if you have focus, at the end of the day, you are bound to win.
You mentioned that you'd had various jail terms. I mean, to put this in perspective, I mean, you were arrested numerous times. I think I've read that you spent something like 6 years in jail, including 18 months in solitary confinement. And in fact, both of your daughters were born while you were in jail. Is that right?
That's true. Life has been hard. The previous regime wasn't particularly the best of governing methods. They didn't have all these niceties at all, and they were fairly brutal in their treatment of the people, and therefore I was rather unfortunate in this. In sometimes people argued at that moment that I was rather silly, but I just want to keep at it and keep going. And I think that finally this is going to, it has paid back, for instance, for us in the Maldives. And I just feel that others also should not lose focus at all.
So what you're describing are really two enormous challenges. I mean, both to implement a new democratic system in your country, I mean, with you being the leader, and also facing this global crisis of climate change and what this could do to your country. I mean, it could literally obliterate the Maldives.
Well, yeah, very true. You know, we've been in the middle of the Indian Ocean for the last 5,000 years. We have a written history that goes back 2,000 years. And it's just unimaginable that we might not be around. And it's very difficult to plan as a country, as a society, when everyone else is telling you that you're going to die tomorrow. So, at the end of the day, we should be, what we are doing is planning for a peaceful death.
You've been called the global president because, in a way, you've become the spokesman for a world on the brink of immense change, dealing with the effects of climate change. And because of the vulnerability of your country, it sounds like this has become a very personal mission for you.
Well, I feel that a lot of us are just talking on the wrong things. The old order of things are not going to give us solutions. The old economics is not going to give us solutions for our housing problems, our banking problems, or our trade issues. The old manner of thinking in many instances are producing not the effect that we want. Especially when the West, for instance, have achieved such good growth and such they've succeeded. The capitalist system has really delivered such a good civilized manner of living that it is not no longer possible for us to expand anymore. So I feel that we are on the brink of a new technological renaissance, in a sense. And I just feel that those who are able to embrace the future would be the winners of tomorrow. And if you want to lead tomorrow, we have to find solutions to the problems that are not facing us now, but the problems that will face us in the next 20 years. But countries I see are bogged down and worried about the situations that they are facing now. Now, true, you can only get votes and popularity if you are dealing with the present. But I think as leaders, we have a responsibility to tell our people that there must be a tomorrow. And just doing your thing for the day is not going to be sustainable for the future. So I think people will change. I feel that we will come out with new lines of thinking and new economics, in a sense. I don't think that climate change is just an earth science issue. I also think that this is an economics issue as much. So hopefully Chicago is going to come out with another economics that is going to also deal with the climate change issues.
But the thing that makes this so difficult is it's not as if you can just get rid of all fossil fuels, for instance, in your country. I mean, you're talking about a global problem. What happens in the rest of the world is what determines how global climate works. I mean, you're really asking the rest of the world to change their ways to limit emissions to bring climate change under control so that your country can survive. I mean, it sounds almost like an impossible task.
No. Basically, we are asking, what we are saying is, A, what happens to the Maldives today is going to happen to you tomorrow. It's not just the Maldives, it's everyone. We are all Maldivians in this sense. B, I also feel that our existing economics is not delivering the security of the banking system, the financial system, the manner in which we are organizing ourselves seems to be just giving us double-digit recession after recession after recession. We don't seem to be getting out of these things anymore at all. So I think it is time that good-thinking people sit down and realize and try to assess what is happening to us and come out with fresh thinking. And I really do think that sooner or later, rather sooner, we will find sensible people coming out with sensible solutions, and they will be renewable energy solutions. Now, I don't want anyone to give up the good life. You know, I like good food and good. I like to watch a film. I like to read a good book. I like the good life. So what we are suggesting is that development is not always equal to carbon emission. There can be low carbon development strategies. That is why Maldives wants to become carbon neutral. And we understand that by us becoming carbon neutral is not going to change anything. But even if we are very small, it's always the individual, it's the household, it's the family. So if we can find solutions for a house, it's a multiplication of many, many million homes for everyone. What we are trying to suggest to the developing world is that the argument that carbon emission is equal to development is wrong. That is not necessarily true.
Now, you've said that there are sensible solutions out there. And obviously, I mean, this is a huge issue and we could spend many hours talking about this. But give me one or two examples of the kinds of solutions you are advocating.
Well, no, I mean, your countries, many states in your country, in the United States, I mean, for instance, California. I met the Californian governor a few times. And so much of their electricity is now driven by photovoltaic and solar power. And there are three understood technologies now that can deliver and that are delivering. It's just that we don't have the funds as much as the fuel oil companies to advertise on these things and to get the message across to suggest that this is what it is. I think the technology is available. And I think the solutions are also mapped. It's a question of changing to that, but this change is so difficult for us because of vested interest.
Are you saying that you think all fossil fuels can be replaced by alternative technologies, you know, wind power, solar power, that kind of thing?
I mean, you know, fossil fuel was only a recent invention. We haven't had the combustion engine is only about 200-300 years old. So, you know, we were not born, the world was not created with the internal combustion engine. And the world will certainly switch to alternative forms. And I think we should be able to smart enough to see that where the future is taking us. And, you know, that is the America that I know of.
Now, you mentioned that you have made a pledge to make the Maldives carbon neutral by the year 2020. What kind of progress are you making?
Well, we've done a carbon audit, which means where the carbon is being emitted. And then after that, we've done an investment plan to it, which means where we have to invest and what kind of projects and programs that we have to bring. So I think we are moving along fine and according to our work plan. And we have some projects that are now going also in renewable energy. And I really think that this is doable and we will do it.
Now, as we know, the world is mired in an economic crisis right now. And one thing that tends to happen is that issues like climate change are put on the back burner as countries try to get their economic house in order. I mean, do you worry about this, that maybe climate change is just not that big an issue for a lot of other countries where they have so many other problems?
I think this is extremely silly, and people will realize how silly they are. They come up with your conventional fiscal methods and monetary methods of dealing with economic recessions. And we think that these fiscal adjustments will take us out from economic difficulties. But increasingly what we are finding is that, you know, one recession after another is taking us to elsewhere, other than the prosperity we thought that will come from the adjustments that we are making. So finally, I think very soon, economists would come to understand that there must be another set of economic theories and relationships that we have to identify to keep us in growth. We're not in growth anymore. Of course, I mean, many developing countries are in growth because they have room, they have space for growth. Now, for instance, your country has done it all. There's nothing more to do. So we have to think outside the frame to get any more milk out of this.
So you're really talking about the need for new ideas. I mean, almost a new conceptual framework that challenges the old assumptions that economic growth is necessarily good for a country.
But no, economic growth is good. You know, what I'm suggesting is the existing models are not giving growth to developed countries, to developed countries. The fiscal and monetary policies, the Chicago School viewpoints, the Keynesian economics is giving us, yes, it does, it works. It works for the Maldives, but it is not working in the United States, I find. It is not working in Europe that we are finding. So there must be something else that you can do after you've reached full employment, full production, and full prosperity and happiness for all. So you've reached that these kind of extreme limits. And to overshoot these limits, you need to break through with new thinking.
Now, we've talked about how your country, the Maldives, is in imminent danger with climate change. And I know a few years ago when you were first elected, you announced a rather audacious plan to buy land in other countries like India so that some of your citizens could move there. Is that realistic?
Well, I worked along with these plans, but many people are just saying, you know, we would rather die here. I met one old lady. She told me, President, where would the flowers and the sounds and the smells go? And that she can go, but where we've been there for the last 2,000 years, why do we have to go? Let's all die here. So it's the idea of moving is not taking hold. You know, it's not there. And so we'll have to fend for ourselves. And if shove comes for a push, we just have to say, may God help us.
Is that the way you feel yourself? Would you stay there even
moving.
If...
I am not moving.
Huh. Even though you are, you're a worldly man, you've been to, you know, a lot of other countries, you've lived abroad, you're staying in the Maldives.
Well, I've almost lived all most of my childhood in boarding in England. I went to university there. Yes, but you always come home to roost. And I think there is no better place than home. And I'm sure there's a lot of other people who would rather quietly die at home.
We've been talking with you in your capacity as the leader of your country, as the president. You're also a father. You have two daughters
yes.
there in this country that's in mm-hmm. great danger. What do you want for them?
Well, I want safety and security for them. I really do want safety and security for them. And that actually is why, first, I wanted them not to be tortured and ill-treated. And then now we want them to actually, you know, we're kind of coming to realize that they might live without being murdered and ill-treated and tortured, because we may be able to come up with a democratic form of governance. But that's not enough. We have this huge looming disaster, and we need everyone else to put their act together and then see if humanity can survive. I mean, we're talking not about the Maldives. It's really not just the Maldives. It's the planet Earth. And there is no plan B because there is no planet B.
What do you think it will take people around the world, especially leaders, people with the capacity to take action, to recognize the threat that you are describing?
I think we will have to have people. Leaders will only do what people want them to do. American people, European people, everyone has to come out on the streets. They have to go into direct action. And everyone has to realize that this is the gravity of the issue. The gravity of the issue has to be understood. And for that to happen, many people must die. That is the sad thing. Believing is seeing for us.
People must die before action will be taken on climate change.
That seems to be how it is moving along.
And how do you think people would die? I mean, this is a rather grim forecast here. I mean, you're saying there has to be true crisis before people make any changes.
Well, we are not smart, are we? As humans, we are. So insufficient, and we are always more focused on what we have right now and not even just after tomorrow. So it would take a huge catastrophe for us to, I think, realize that things are going wrong. And we are seeing this every year, we are seeing it. If you look at the data in the United States, you will see it. But then if you have a whole lot of other people who are willing to cover it up in a sense and then come up with other viewpoints and advertise on the different viewpoints and so on, then we will never see the other viewpoint.
Now, this is really a pretty bleak scenario that you've laid out for us. Are you more a pessimist or more an optimist? I mean, do you think...
I'm an optimist. I believe in the human ingenuity. I think we will survive. I think the United States would come around to the idea that we have to fend for saving the world, saving the planet. And I think we will find solutions. It's just that we're going through a very difficult few years where the catastrophe hasn't arrived, but it's looming just around the corner. And I have a feeling that one of these days, someone's going to hit us very hard. That someone is going to be wind, a typhoon, a wave, or something like that. And then we will understand.
President Nasheed, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.